Joel, you want to know something?
What?
Every now and then, say what the f***. What the f*** gives you freedom? Freedom brings opportunity. Opportunity makes your future.
Welcome to Sailing in the Mediterranean podcast. I'm your host. My name is Franz. Well, I've got a couple letters from listeners. I wanted to go over them. And I'll start out with the most recent one. This comes from Justin. Justin says, love the podcast. I've been listening for just over a year and wanted to thank you for the many stories you've shared. I'm a 40-year-old semi-retired software engineer from Michigan. Since I was in my early 20s, I've been collecting sailing books, magazines, and tons of Patrick O'Brien historical fiction. The problem is I've never actually been out on a sailing vessel. I've been out fishing on the Great Lakes since I was a child, but I've never had the opportunity to sail. You strike me as a highly experienced skipper who consistently puts safety first. And it can't hurt to ask how in the world I might find myself on a sailing adventure with you sometime in the future. I spent the first half of my life with computers, building online businesses, and would like to spend the second half of my life seeing the world. I appreciate your grounded perspective. You are a realist. I know you would probably prefer to sail with a beginner with 1 month hands-on sailing experience than an entrepreneur who reads Bowditch. So please tell me, am I being unrealistic? I would love to find a way to actually begin sailing, not just dreaming about it. Well, Justin, I've given this one actually quite a bit of thought. And first of all, I don't know where in Michigan you live, but you've got the Great Lakes around you. I'm sure there's racing yacht clubs on Lake Michigan. In fact, I've sailed on the Chicago to Mackinac Island race, Chicago Mac race, 3 times with friends out of Chicago. And I'm sure wherever you're at, you have the opportunity to sail if you put forth the effort. And probably just going out to a yacht club meeting, letting people know you want to crew, if it's possible. I don't know how far you are away from the Great Lakes. You've got Michigan on one side, and I think, what is it, Lake Ontario on the other side? So, and you didn't tell me whether you're married or not, or whether you have kids or not, because that sometimes has a big effect on whether you can afford to spend full days out sailing. When I started racing on the Great Salt Lake, and come on, I wasn't near the ocean. I learned to sail on the Great Salt Lake. And I learned to sail as well as anybody that sailed on the ocean did. In fact, I would say probably better, because we had to deal with very light wind sailing and very heavy wind sailing. And people that have never been seasick a day in their life will get seasick on the Great Salt Lake. So geographic location shouldn't be a barrier. At least it probably shouldn't be a barrier. You can learn the basics by getting in a dinghy. Some of the best racing sailors have started out racing dinghies. The fundamentals are the same. In fact, when you start learning on a dinghy, you learn to read the wind better than big boat sailors do, because it affects you so much more quickly. But can you go sailing with me? Well, yeah, that is a possibility. Let me tell you how I do things. First of all, around January or February, I will block out usually 2 months, and I will go and buy my airline ticket, so now I'm committed. I usually give myself about 2 months. Now, at that point in time, I decide where I want to go sailing and start laying out a route. And I try to work it out so that I don't really sail much more than 30 miles a day. Every now and then I have to do long days because there's really no choice. But as a general rule, I don't like to go more than 30 miles between ports. Remember, I'm traveling, number one and sailing number two. Some people just want to sail. I don't think that's that exciting. I like to use my sailboat to travel. But you have to know how to sail to do that. Well, once I've laid out a route, I break it up to 1 week increments. And when I say 1 week, I usually mean about 5 days on the boat, maybe 6 days on the boat. And then I send out invitations to number one, my family, and find out how many weeks they want to sail with me. That's usually 2 to 3 weeks. And then after that, I contact my clients. And I invite my clients to go sailing with me. After that, if it's not filled up at that point in time, and quite often I have more room after I've invited my clients, and I tell them, this is first come, first serve. These are the time slots. This is where you'll meet me. This is where you'll get off. And then if you want to join me, get a hold of me right away, because I'm not holding open any spots for any particular client. And that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes I do favor a couple clients over others because I've sailed with them and I like them. But as a general rule, I don't hold out particular spots for specific clients. My clients pay my salary, so they come before anybody after my family. And then after that, I'll invite my friends, people that I know usually, and occasionally I'll invite a stranger. Last year, I invited one of my listeners from Las Vegas, and it turned out that they couldn't join me, so that went to somebody else. That slot went to somebody else. Neil, who's handling my social media for me, I've invited to go sailing. We don't know when, but I've told him as a quid pro quo for the effort he's put in for me on handling my Twitter account, my Facebook account, my Instagram account, that I don't expect him to do this for free. And if he wants to come sailing, I'll make sure he gets an opportunity to do that. And he said he does want to do that. I'm going to be interviewing Neil in the next few weeks about his charter trip in Croatia. I am interested to get his perspective on that. So, Justin, if you want to go sailing with me, probably the most likely way you can do that is to open an account with me. Now, I never advertised my services on this podcast, and that's not my intention, but my profession is I'm a registered investment advisor. I manage client portfolios. I really require a minimum of $200,000 in a portfolio to manage it. That gives me enough money to make a diversified portfolio for my clients. We sit down, we set out the priorities of the client, whether it's capital preservation, how much risk they're willing to take on, and then I design a portfolio and manage a portfolio for my clients, and I charge them 1% of the assets that I manage. So if I have a $200,000 portfolio, the client will pay me over a year period of time $2,000 for managing that portfolio. And there's lots more to it, but that's probably the easiest way to get an invitation to go sailing with me. Now, I'd like to take all my listeners sailing. I like to meet new people. In fact, years ago when I had my boat up in the Northwest, up in the San Juan Islands, I would always donate one weekend, and that would usually be composed of 3 nights and 4 days on the boat, to a charity, and they would auction it off and raise money for the particular charity. I haven't done that since I've been in the Mediterranean because they have to pay for their trip, they have to pay for their airfare. Oh, and by the way, when my clients join me, they pay all their own transportation, and quite often they pick up a few meal tabs now and then, but it's not required. So the invitation extends only to being on the boat, not to any of the travel expenses associated with getting to and from the boat. So I like to meet new people, and I look forward to meeting new people. And quite honestly, I enjoy taking people sailing that have never been sailing before. I like it because quite often, this may be the only time they go sailing, and I've given them a memory that's going to last them a lifetime. and they'll tell all their friends and family about it, and it's something that lasts forever. So I like taking strangers sailing, and I like taking strangers that have never sailed before as much as people that have sailed before. It's easier on me if I have a crew that knows what they're doing, but the nice thing about my boat is I can handle it myself. In fact, I'll usually give myself a week during that two-month period of time to do some solo sailing, just to keep my skills up to snuff. A few podcasts ago, I put out an invitation that if anybody wanted me to organize a group and go sailing as a group, that I might follow up and see if there was any interest in that. There was no interest in that. But if you have an interest in wanting me to sail a boat for you, I can do that, assuming I have the time in my schedule to do that. Now, that's the big caveat there. But here's how that would work. You would need to agree to pay my airfare. You would need to pay for the charter vessel. And you would need to pay me an honorarium of a couple $100 a day. Haven't had any takers on that. I don't really expect to have any takers on that. But that's the other way that you might get to go sailing with me. But quite honestly, that's not a high priority for me because my life's pretty busy and I don't know that I can take that much more time sailing than I already do. So I hope that answers your question. Bowditch. Let's see. I've got three copies of Bowditch in my office. The American Practical Navigator I have. I'm looking at it right now. The 1938 edition, and then another edition that was in the 1980s, as I recall. Another one you probably should have is Dutton's Navigation and Piloting. And, of course, I loved reading the Hornblower series. I liked reading the Patrick O'Brien series. So, you know, that's how you start dreaming about what you're going to do. But, remember my quote, dreamers of the day are dangerous men because they act out their dreams with open eyes and make it possible. So, I don't know what your personal situation is, if you're free or not, but if you have a family and you want to take them sailing, that's the best thing you can possibly do for them. Take them traveling. I guess I should tell you what I've been doing the last week. I went to Wisconsin for Thanksgiving. My daughters now live there. They moved from Elko, Nevada to Wisconsin. My son-in-law is working for one of the frac sand manufacturers in Eau Claire. And my gosh, it's cold up there. I live in balmy Salt Lake City, where today it was in its 30s and 40s. There, the high on Monday was 8 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, for you guys in Europe, I don't know how that converts to Celsius. I'm heading off on Saturday to fly down to Atlanta, Georgia, to pick up a car. My wife's car, as I told you in previous podcasts, was destroyed by hitting a deer. We finally found a replacement car. She wanted a RAV4. We couldn't find any locally here, so I had a friend of mine, who's an auto dealer, look nationwide for an all-wheel drive RAV4 with low miles on it, and we found one that's actually in Alabama, but it's going to be run through the Manheim auction in Atlanta, Georgia. So I fly there Saturday. I'll pick up the car. I'll drive to see some friends in Birmingham, Alabama, and then I'll be driving across the country. And in January, I'm heading off to Thailand for 3 weeks. Been to Thailand once before, but I'm looking forward to going to Thailand again. On this trip, I'm going to do a side trip to go to Angkor Wat in Cambodia, and then my wife flies back, and I'm sticking around another week, and I want to try to get up to Myanmar. I've looked at the coast off Myanmar on the Indian Ocean side. Of course, that's the only side that Myanmar has a coast, but there's lots and lots of islands off that coast. Untapped cruising territory, so I want to go check it out. If you're in Thailand, want to get together, let me know. I do have a friend that lives in Thailand. I do plan on meeting up with him as well. And he may join me on my trip to Myanmar. So those are my upcoming trips. I want to get this podcast out before I take off to Atlanta. All right, next letter. This comes from Richard. It says, glad the website is updated and working okay. I'm up to date on all your podcasts now. Great listening, and it has been great for keeping me awake on a couple of long drives recently. The sailing club I joined 6 months ago, just a relatively small reservoir, about 0.75 miles in length, has offered powerboat training for a very bargain price of £40, which gives us 2 days training. We'll get to the Royal Yachting Association level 2, so we can be safe when using small rescue boats on sailing days. But of course, also allows us to hire boats when away. I believe we can also apply for an international license after doing this. Have had day one today and day two next week. Looking online, these courses are £200 plus, so nice bonus, but also gives the club qualified drivers. Rescue boat training is in January. Looking forward to booking a day skipper course next year to allow me to bareboat charter at some point. Retirement plan is to cruise the Med from the UK. You mentioned VAT on boats. It wasn't clear as EU citizens, but I'm assuming there's no VAT for me in Europe. All right, I'm going to deviate from the reading of this letter and clarify this. Richard, VAT follows the boat. If you're in European waters and keep the boat in European waters, you will have to pay VAT. But once the VAT is paid on the boat, then you can sell the boat VAT tax paid. So there's only tax on the boat one time. So if you buy a new boat, you're going to have to pay VAT on that boat if you keep the boat in European waters or EU waters. Unless you buy a used boat that has VAT paid. So there you go on that one. And it's always a headache for Americans and non-EU residents to sail European waters because we leave money behind and we don't get any services. So why should we pay VAT? But logic doesn't rule when politicians get their ideas on grabbing money from people. All right, moving on to the rest of your question. The rest of that paragraph deals with the pros and cons of different winter locations. You pretty much are going to be forced to getting out of the EU if you don't want to pay VAT on your boat. Why do you think my boat's been left in Turkey for so many years and was in Croatia? Now Croatia is part of the EU, so I can't leave it there anymore. So not very many places you can hide from VAT anymore. All right, here he goes again. I was watching a dreadful YouTube video the other day showing how to med more using lazy lines. I think you mentioned this very briefly, but the video said most harbors had this now and having to anchor was rare. Okay, deviate from the letter again. No, that's not true. In Greece, you almost always drop an anchor and back in, but in Spain, in Italy, where you go into marinas, that is the case. And even in Greece, there are a few marinas that do have lazy lines. But in Greece, most of the public harbors, you drop your anchor and back in. Personally, for me, that's easier for me than picking up lazy lines because my boat does not back up very well. And once I get that anchor out in front, that helps me back up. So even if I had to pick up lazy lines, I would prefer to drop my anchor and back in. And if they had lazy lines, then I'd be glad to pick up the lazy lines. But then you run the risk of hooking on the moorings if you drop an anchor and they have lazy lines already down. Reading on with this letter. It says, Greece is lovely. And he talks about, yes, Greece still does use anchors primarily. It says, Greece is lovely, but I guess many people are afraid of more language barriers going to small Greek places as opposed to Spanish and Italian shores and islands. You also mentioned become a Spanish citizen or something. No, I never mentioned that. I don't plan on becoming a European citizen in any way. Why would I want additional government over what I've already got? I've got enough government here in the United States. I'd actually probably like to get the Spanish gentleman that talked about VAT on again. That of all the podcasts I've put together, that's the one that's had the most downloads. And I'd either like to get him back again and do another interview, or get another expert on VAT taxes and talk to them again and just do another one and reiterate what the VAT situation is, because it's a fluid situation. It seems to change from year to year. Okay, you've mentioned the checking into and out of countries. What happens if you don't? Penalties? Question mark. You made it sound like a chore in some places, so some people may be tempted to skip this, perhaps. Might be worth discussing. Yeah, I know some people do skip it from time to time, and probably you can get away with it most of the time. But it's sort of like playing Russian roulette. If you get caught, the penalties can be very, very, very severe. So it really comes down to, do you feel lucky? And to quote the Clint Eastwood movie Dirty Harry, do you feel lucky? Well, do you, punk? I don't want to play Russian roulette. So I go ahead and go through the headaches and the expense of clearing in and clearing out of countries. Now, the country I've had the most difficulty even finding a place to check in has been Italy. I go to Harbor Masters and say I want to check in. They sort of wave me off and tell me to go away or go to the next marina down the line. They don't want to be bothered with it. But eventually, I've always found some place to check in. So, yeah, it's plain Russian roulette. I don't want to deal with that. So, but then again, I have met sailors that have avoided checking in various places from time to time. All right. Radios, how to find port frequencies. Probably the easiest thing to do is just get on channel 16, call up the marina. They will come back immediately and tell you what station to tune to. Usually it's 73, I think, is the frequency that most marinas use. But they always monitor channel 16. Just because a lot of people don't know. You can find it in the pilots as well, what marina frequencies operate on. Then you talk about the quality. Then you say, do all harbor masters speak English? As a general rule, yes, they do. Maybe halting English, but I've always been able to get by anywhere I've traveled by speaking English. And interestingly enough, when I went to Spain, I found it more difficult to find people that spoke English in Spain in the smaller cities than I ever have in Greece. Then the other thing, you talked about small craft weather warnings. Where was this? Radio, weather channel. Yes, I was giving you specific weather forecasting information from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. I think I had a recording of one of their weather broadcasts. They are available pretty much around the country. Anywhere you live, you can tune into a VHF weather channel, and there's about 7 of them, as I recall. Europe doesn't have this, as I'm aware of it, but they do have what they call Navtex, which can download a daily synopsis. I have a Navtex on my boat. I don't use it very often because I find now with the internet, I usually find a Wi-Fi and download the weather forecast on my iPhone. It's much more convenient. But if I'm out and about and I don't have access to Wi-Fi, then I can tune into the various frequencies. And these are found in the pilots. And you get pilots for the areas you're sailing. There's pilots for every specific area in the Mediterranean, and they are well worth whatever they cost you. Then you talk to me about the quality of my recordings. Some are good, some are bad. Yes, that's just the way it is. You talk about using my iPhone for it. No, I wouldn't use my iPhone for recording. I try to record when I record into a microphone. I record in wave format, which is a large format. And then I change it from WAV file format to an MP3 format, because it's much smaller. And I do have a portable recorder that I tried actually doing some podcasts in last summer. I'll be honest, when I'm in harbors and marinas, I've debated on trying to interview other sailors, but most people don't want to be bothered with it. So I do most of my recording either when I'm on a walk, when I'm back in the States, or in the studio like I am today. My studio is my office, and I've turned off the furnaces so you don't have that background noise. I think that pretty much answers your question. And the last letter was from Greg. Greg says, "Hey Franz, I bought your 101 audio lessons. I think they're great." Thanks, Greg. Why don't you go into iTunes or Amazon and write me a review? There's been one listener that has written a review, and it was pretty flattering. I did not write that. I promise you, I did not write that review. I think it's in Amazon, but it was very flattering, and it's nice to know you had value to a product and people appreciate it. So, he says, "I'd encourage you to add more real-world anecdotes and experiences whenever you can. I also hope you do finish the 103, 104. I'd also be interested in hearing you cover dealing with the unexpected, if you don't cover it much in the upcoming recordings. I cruise the Chesapeake in a monohull and am preparing to venture into the Caribbean with family for more extended trips on a cat. I'd like to learn more about how you would deal with things like man overboard, lightning strikes, fire, medical issue while in blue water." Actually, Greg, I've been doing lessons for 103 dealing with exactly that. In fact, today I did a 20-minute lesson. This is lesson number 15, and we dealt with what happens when you lose a rudder, how do you steer your boat, and what happens when you get a line wrapped around your prop, how do you deal with that? And that was 20 minutes of edited information. I don't think I'm going to try to cover that in these podcasts. Okay, that finishes up the letters and my editorial comments on the letters. I do have the ASA 101 series out, and I'm, like I said, lesson number 15 on the ASA 103. That's probably going to be, probably almost 20 lessons long. And it may be almost 10 hours of audio material, so I'll probably charge the same price, $30, $29 for that lesson series as well. And if you go back through my past podcasts and you're listening to this, I do give you a coupon discount if you order it through the website. Go back through the podcast. I think three podcasts ago, I gave you a coupon code for getting a discount on the ASA 101 if you want to go do that. The only thing I'm going to cover today is, again, talking about the Cocladas Islands. And I'm only going to be talking about one island because I want to get this done and get it out there. So I'm going to talk about the island of Syros. I've only been to Syros one time, so I don't have very much information on it. We had sailed from Lavrion over to Chia, down to Kithnos, and then from Kithnos we headed over to Syros. Actually, we sailed from Chia directly to Syros. We didn't hit Kithnos that year. I was with my friend Jeff and Rick, and we came down the west side of Syros, and we spent one night at a little anchorage in a town called Galissas, 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 I think is how you pronounce it. Small town, small village, had dinner there, found a place to take a shower there. Nothing particularly interesting about it. And then the next day we sailed up over the north end of Syros and then back down to Ermopoli. Now, Ermopoli's a big harbor. It's sort of like a hub for a lot of the ferries in the Aegean, in the Greek waters in the Aegean. We side-tied right in the big bay, and it's such a big bay with so much traffic going in and out of it that it was really uncomfortable. I let my crew get off and go wander through the village, And I stayed on the boat because I didn't want to get off the boat. I wanted to make sure my bumper stayed down, and if I needed to, I could move the boat off the wall. They came back. They loved the village. It was beautiful. They said it was so much fun to walk back through the little alleys up there, but I never got a chance to look at it. There's a fishing harbor that's around the boatyard. There's a big boatyard there with dry docks in it. And it's called the fishing harbor, but it's pretty full, and you might or might not be able to get in there. Looking on Google Earth, it looks like there's a brand new marina down to the south end of the bay, but it looks like it's one of the typical EU projects that they put the marina in and they never finished it. Don't know that for a fact, but that's what I see here. There's a few other anchorages on the island I haven't been to. They look like they'd be nice. There's a town called Finicus. It looks like it'd be a nice protected anchorage in a Maltimi with all-around protection up in the north corner of this harbor. So one of these days I'll go back and spend some more time there. I had a particularly bad experience when we left Ermoupoli. We're heading over to Mykonos. It was getting late in the day. My crew needed to get off in Mykonos, and we wanted to head over there. So we were pulling out of the harbor, and it was blowing quite hard, and it was quite bumpy in the harbor. And a boat with customs painted on its side pulled up to us and said, "Come here, tie next to us." We did. They said, "Give us your papers." We did. They said, "Give us your passports." We did. We sat there and waited and waited and waited. The captain of this boat said, "Okay, go over, tie on the side, and come into our office." And I said, "Listen, what's wrong? Is there something wrong with our papers? Because it's very dangerous for me to tie up my boat in these wind conditions. What's the story?" He didn't speak very good English, but he could tell I was irritated. And he basically said, "Okay," he gave back the papers and the passports and said, "Be on your way." My gut feel was he was looking for a bribe. And he realized he wasn't going to get a bribe from me. Americans just don't know how to bribe. It's not part of a culture. And I wouldn't have a clue on how to go about bribing somebody. So I didn't think much of that, but I've heard that it's a neat village to visit. And maybe someday I'll go back and visit it again. It's a big shipping capital. A lot of shipping families come from Syros. The Koulikoundis family, who were from Kassos, they pretty much moved to Syros and set that up as a family headquarters, even though they're originally from Kassos. And there's quite a big shipping tradition in Syros. Today, I'm going to do our quiz lessons, and then I'll close it out. Thanks for listening. And if you want to get a hold of me, and I do appreciate those letters, just email me Franz, F-R-A-N-Z, at medsailor.com. And if you do have an interest in becoming a client, my firm name is Amason Hunsaker & Associates. You can look me up on Google by typing in Franz, F-R-A-N-Z, Amason, A-M-U-S-S-E-N, and you can find our firm phone number by searching for my name or Amason, A-M-U-S-S-E-N, Hunsaker, H-U-N-S-A-K-E-R, and Associates Incorporated. But that's not the point of these podcasts. And now it's time for the sailing questions for this week's podcast. Inland only. If you are coming up on another power-driven vessel from dead astern and desire to overtake on the other vessel's starboard side, which whistle signal would you sound? Remember, this is where you're coming up on a vessel, not where you're crossing. A, one short blast. B, one prolonged blast. C, two short blasts. Or D, two prolonged blasts. The answer is A, one short blast. Inland only question. Which statement is true concerning narrow channels? A, you should keep to that side of the channel which is on your port side. B, you should avoid anchoring in a narrow channel. C, a vessel having a following current will propose the manner of passing in any case where two vessels are meeting. Or D, all of the above. The answer is B, you should avoid anchoring in a narrow channel. And A is wrong because you should keep to the side of the channel which is on your starboard side. So that's sort of a red herring there. Inland only. Which term is not defined in the inland navigation rules? A, a seaplane. B, restricted visibility. C, underway. Or D, vessel constrained by her draft. Well, the answer is D, because that's sort of a trick question. There is a definition for a vessel which is restrained in ability to maneuver, but not a vessel constrained by her draft. Now, a vessel constrained by her ability to maneuver may be constrained by draft, but there is not a specific definition for a vessel constrained by her draft. Inland only. When you are overtaking another vessel and desire to pass on her left or port side, you should sound. Now, this is not in a narrow channel. This is just out on the open ocean. A, one short blast. B, one long blast. C, two short blasts. Or D, two prolonged blasts. The answer is C, two short blasts. One more thing. I put up a video, and it's available on YouTube as well, but it's at the website, medsailor.com, that shows my self-steering gear, my wind vane self-steering gear, in operation and how I build it and how it's put together. It may be something that's of interest to a lot of you. If it is, please go to the website, medsailor.com, and look for my self-steering wind vane, use and construction. Click it, it'll play in the window there, or you can look for it in YouTube as well. So that's going to finish up the podcast.
Joe, do you have something to tell me?
No, I don't think so.
I just got off the telephone with Bill Rutherford. Princeton can use a guy like Joe.
What?
Princeton can use a guy like Joe. His exact words.
That's unbelievable.
You're as good as in. I knew you could do it. Haven't I been telling you, every once in a while, you just gotta say, what the heck, and take some chances.
You are so right.
You've made me very proud.
I was just thinking where we might be 10 years from now, you know?